Hi, thanks for being here for June Ask the Mayor. We're in Bloomington with Mayor John Hamilton. We meet, unfortunately, the day after the Orlando gay nightclub shooting. I guess, what went through your mind when the news broke?
You know, Joe, I was actually with family at a wedding over the weekend. I heard about it Sunday midday, so I wasn't fresh on the news like some. I just wasn't watching the news. My heart broke. I couldn't believe it at first. Then on the other hand, you realize it's just excruciating how this rhythm keeps happening of these terrible events. Cities we know, Newtown and Aurora and San Bernardino and Charleston and St. Fort Hood and now Orlando added to that list. And it's really frustrating and tragic.
Does your mind drift to, you know, what ifs, especially with Indy, Spencer Pride these past two weekends?
Yeah, Joe, you know, 10 days ago I was with a meeting all dressed in orange with a lot of people from Bloomington talking about gun violence and what we need to try to reduce it. And we named those cities that had the problems, and we said, we don't know who's next. It could be any one of us. And then 10 days later, Orlando suffers it. And as you said, the weekend before, you had pride marches going on all around the state, all around the country. And, I said 10 days ago, our country doesn't need to be like this. It shouldn't be like this, and we need to take steps for it. As the president has said, America is not more prone to violence than other places. Our people are not more violent. We just have different things happening because of some of parts of our culture. And it's very distressing. Yes, any community has to be aware that it could happen anywhere, anytime, in the blink of an eye. I just swore in two new police officers today, and you can't help but think about, you know, the police officers in Orlando who are called to do gruesome work and saved many lives probably by their actions at the end of that siege. And our own officers, of course, train and be ready for that, and it just breaks your heart to think about what that does to a community.
Yeah, we see a lot of politicians offering support on media. Some are saying that that's not enough. What can politicians do to help act on these types of violent situations?
Well, you know, I said when we gathered 10 days ago on that gun awareness and support for sensible gun laws, this is a place where our politics has simply collapsed. The American people, in large majorities, do not want the kind of gun society that we have. We can protect the rights and privileges of individuals to have firearms for protection or for sport, but we can do a lot more to pass laws and enforce laws and have support mechanisms that can help deter this kind of horrific outrage. Of course, we can't stop it all, but Connecticut passed laws after Newtown that reduced gun deaths by 40%. That's a lot of people. Connecticut passed those laws that were tightening up gun controls, and they also increased training. There are things we can do. Our politics has collapsed on this, and it's important for not, of course, we're sympathetic with Orlando, but there are steps we should be taking to improve gun enforcement and to improve training and to improve services for people who are in need of services to help avoid these kind of tragedies.
I see the back door here in Bloomington hosting a fundraiser Wednesday night. What else can the community do? A lot of times during these bad times, people want to do something.
Well, you know, in my State of the City address in February, I talked about actually what is it that as a community, if such a thing were to happen, what is it we wish we would have done beforehand? Now, supporting Orlando and we have an event Tuesday night at City Hall that's going to be an expression of support, and those are good and those are important. But think about what it is as a community we should and could do ahead of time to try to avert this kind of thing. It has to include continuing to push for better public safety. We do a better job making our toys safe compared to how we make our guns safe. There are things we can do and that we should be doing. I think there are also things we need to do looking around the community to try to identify people, individuals, who may be at risk of acting out in bad ways. Do we have a detox center that we need? Do we have the mental health services that we need? you know, are the disaffected people in this community, are we including them? Are we not stigmatizing people? It's easy to create enemies and others and to try to act as if we can't understand these other human beings, but we need to work on that every day. Even not scapegoating people, not, you know, we have to find the people for whom they're at risk to us, whether they're an act of terror, an act of hate, an act of mental illness or desperation. All of those things we can work on and try to reduce.
I also see you announced a new affordable, is it a senior living proposal, Monday morning. How did this come about, and what kind of need does this fill?
Well, Joe, I'm very glad we've been able to work with a group called Evergreen Partners. They work nationally. They're in about 15 states. This is the first time in Indiana, and we've worked with them to help support the creation of a residential care facility. This is basically focused on low-income seniors. There's no facility like this within 50 miles of Bloomington. It's a focus on seniors making below $15,000 a year on Medicaid, so it's lower-income seniors. Typically, they may have only Social Security as benefits, and it's for those who can't stay in their home but don't need to go to a nursing home. Right now, that gap means you may have to leave town, and Carrie Conway of the Area 10 Agency on Aging joined me. She knows how big a need this is in our community. The state allows tax abatement and tax credits for this, and federal tax credits. We've worked with Evergreen to create 115 units serving these folks in our community, and we're very pleased about it. I hope the City Council needs to review it. I hope they'll review it and endorse it. Look forward to working with them on that. But it's a big gap in the community. Low-wealth seniors aren't ready for a nursing home, but they can't stay at home.
Is there a location set for that, or is that still early, too early in the process?
There is. Evergreen has purchased land in Canada off of Canada Farms, off of Sayre Road, southeast side of Bloomington. And they have a place the Plan Commission has reviewed, this 115-unit building. It's a big need. It's really serving a need. Carrie Conway, in fact, interestingly pointed out that even in the LGBTQ community in Bloomington, which over 65 years old, we have significant percentage. Some of them have to break up and leave the community that's so welcoming and warm to them to go to other places when they need this kind of facility. Now we'll have it here in town.
Now, this also comes on the heels of last month when you announced affordable housing units in the Trades District.
Yes.
Has that progressed? Is there any new information on that proposal?
Right. So moving forward is a project also with state tax credit support, really focused on working families, working individuals, a 40-unit building. We're doing a lot of due diligence on that. That would be right on Rogers Street downtown. In the Trades District. We're trying to get the site location, and they're now getting on site looking at that. They don't have the plans quite as far developed as this Evergreen, but I am happy that these are two new affordable housing projects that are happening right in Bloomington for working families, for seniors with low income. I'm continuing to work to try to make sure we build some momentum toward getting more affordable housing options in Bloomington and working family options. You know, affordable housing can be a wide range of things, and it's just trying to make sure we have options for all kinds of people.
I know there's been committee meetings on the IU Health Bloomington Hospital redevelopment. Any story or update on the new hospital site, though?
You know, we had a meeting, IU Health and Indiana University had a meeting with all of the City of Bloomington cabinet department heads to talk about the new hospital. Timing, needs, that's a ton of work. It's a huge project, multi-hundred million dollar investment. It's a very exciting opportunity for the city to have that kind of investment. It's going to need electricity and water and sewer and gas and roads and trails and sidewalks and all kinds of stuff. A lot of planning on the east side. Their plans are to open that facility in 2020. So between now, over the next 4 years, we've got a lot of work, and we now have a working committee that's set up to kind of dig through all that stuff. It's going to be a lot of work.
New trail being constructed for the two,
yes,
to get to the Switchyard Park. Any news yet, though, on development of Switchyard Park?
Nothing major, Joe. We're in the, you know, these big projects have a lot of stuff happening. It's kind of like painting your house. You know, most of the hard work goes in before you paint it. Most of the hard work goes in prepping and planning and scraping. And so there's a ton of work going on, looking at options, talking about not only in the park, but what happens around the park. And that's all going on. This trail that you mentioned will be an east-west connector from Henderson through to Walnut, which will be a nice third of a mile east-west connector. But no major announcements yet, but keep tuned for this year.
Okay. You already talked about the parking meters last week or so ago, and just to review quickly, 18% failure rate to 2.6%, which is a drastic decrease. Are you happy with the process and how this is working out with that company, IPS, based out of San Diego?
So I don't think I would say I'm happy, but I am. I think we've made progress. We're doing the right thing. Somebody asked me my biggest surprise in the mayor's office. I might list the fact that every one of our parking meters in Bloomington had to be replaced late in 2015. I didn't know that, and I don't think the public knew it. So when I found out the situation we were in, I was quite concerned. We had a high failure rate. It wasn't what we bargained for, frankly, the previous work on that. So when I came into office, I wasn't sure this company could make these things work. I am pleased that we've gotten the failure rate down to what I think is very nearly an acceptable level, and we're confident we're going to get there, and they've promised to get there. They've extended the warranty. We've gotten a money penalty involved. They're going to do some training. They're going to replace every single housing again around the meters to make sure their integrity of the housing and such. I believe we've got this where we need to get it. So we are going to go forward with IPS rather than have to shift to a different company, which would have been a big, big hassle. So I'm not happy with it. I'm very pleased. Our staff worked very hard on this and negotiated weekly conference calls. And I think we're where we can go forward with them. They've worked hard. The company did. I'll give them credit for that. They didn't want this to fall apart. And I think it's going to work okay.
I see where in a lot of the reporting, the city's still getting, is it fair to say about $2 million a year from those meters? Is that a fair estimate?
I think that's right.
Around
we've
there?
A gross revenue of about $2 million a year.
So is that money earmarked for something, or does that just go to the general budget?
So the first thing to say is we're still paying the meters off. We finished paying that off next July, I think, in 2017. The revenues that come in for the parking meters is dedicated to certain things. One of my tasks, one of the things I'm committed to, is so much transparency. We need to get more transparency about that. To date, we've just been focused on getting the meters right, making sure they're running correctly, seeing if we can stay with this company. I do think at this point we now want to open that process up, let the public know what the revenue flow is, what it's supporting. Because, you know, I was in the campaign, we were talking about the meters, transparency is critically important to me, and that we evaluate what it's doing and how it's helping the downtown. And we'll be talking more about that going forward.
We do have an email from Margaret. She wanted to know more about the city's deer problem. She lives in Park Ridge East, which has a lot of deer, and she's concerned about the health danger, in particular deer ticks, and hasn't heard much recently about this, what she calls a health issue. Just wondering your take on that.
Well, the deer, you know, there are really two deer issues in Bloomington. I always like to start with that. There's the deer issue at Griffey Lake, which is really that nature preserve. What do we need to do as a community to protect the nature preserve for the long haul? And then the second is the urban deer problem, which Margaret has asked about, and how to handle the proliferation, expansion numbers of urban deer. When I was born in Indiana, I'm told there were about 10,000 deer. There are now about 500,000 deer, maybe a million. We don't know exactly how many in Indiana. So we've had a huge increase in the number of deer. Bloomington's part of that. It's certainly an issue that has had significant public debate. The urban deer solution, if you will, the urban deer challenge to me, is one that really needs city council and neighborhood by neighborhood discussion. Because I think the response from Park Ridge East may be different from the we're sponsoring Crestmont or Highland Village or other parts of the city, Broadview or downtown, and there are different responses to think about what's the right thing. So I'm encouraging that we discuss this with City Council, think about these options. I do think, to date, as far as I'm aware, this has not been a public health issue. The deer have not been connected in any way that I know with a public health issue. To the extent that they do, if they do, become connected to a public health issue, then the dynamics change. Because it's not just about what kind of neighborhood do we want to be in and how much valuing gardens versus deer and such. If it's a public health issue, then the dynamics do change.
Now, there was a deer task force, but I understand that was dissolved. Do you know what happened to that?
You know, I don't know actually what happened with the task force. They did a report to the council. I think the council probably created it, though I have to say it was before my time. I believe that task force worked hard for actually 2 years, 3 years, I'm not sure, and made a report to the council that then led to the action on the Griffey Lake. I don't know that it led to action from the council yet on the urban deer issue, if you will.
So do you have any plans looking forward of revisiting this?
Well, you know, I welcome conversations and comments about it. As I've said, I have said on the Griffey Lake issue, I do feel it's a custodian's responsibility to make sure we protect that nature preserve. And I do believe it's a park, it's a city park, and we have responsibility, and I as a mayor have responsibility to make sure we're doing what we need to do to protect that integrity of that nature reserve for future generations. And we will do so, and we'll continue to look at that. With the urban deer issue, I've felt and I continue to feel it's really a neighborhood by neighborhood issue. Will it take a citywide solution? I'm not sure. Will there be neighborhood by neighborhood responses? So I really encourage City Council to think about that, individuals to talk to me, to talk to your council member about what you think we ought to do. And I expect we're going to be talking about it in the months ahead.
Just looking out the Monroe Lake Master Plan draft coming out June 24th. I know that the lake is not in the city, but it's a big part of this area. Have you had a chance, or did they involve the city or yourself to take a look at that?
You know, I have personally not reviewed the Lake Monroe Master Plan. I've had a number of conversations. I think the watershed for Lake Monroe, most of which is not even in Monroe County, much less Bloomington, but the watershed, which is so important, I think it is time to have a Lake Monroe watershed effort. That is our drinking water source for us and many, many people around Bloomington. It needs to be protected. We haven't had a regional watershed plan for a long time, and I'll certainly support getting involved in that. Let me just say, we've worked hard in the drinking water plant. We had another second round of the monthly data that just came out in the last few days that showed, again, good results on the disinfectant byproducts. Again, when I first came into office, we had some problems with that. We've seen an improvement. I don't think we're completely out of the woods, but I do want to say that's moving in the right direction, too. And I want to thank Vic Kelson and the utilities folks for their hard work on that.
Yeah, do those two issues, the Monroe Lake Master Plan and the water supply, I assume they probably work hand in hand.
They do connect. You know, our drinking water is part of an active reservoir with lots of things going on in it and around it. And all of those activities help determine the future quality of the water. Now, our job is to use that water and treat it and put it into the healthy shape to make sure it meets all the federal standards, which it does. But in the long run, you know, a farmer in Jackson County affects our drinking water. A boater on Lake Monroe affects our drinking water. Housing development in the area affects our drinking water. So we do need to work together. They definitely relate.
And what else? I know there's a lot, but anything else pressing that you've been working on that we need to talk about?
Well, I think it's important. The City Council passed a public safety local income tax last week or two, along with Ellettsville and the county. I think county acts on it very shortly. You know, if nothing else, the events of this week are a reminder of the constant fundamental of public safety and making sure that our good men and women in both in the police department and the fire department have the equipment they need, have the training they need, have the resources that they need. I'm really proud of the police department. I've sworn in, I think, 9 new officers this year, well-trained, committed folks. We want to make sure they have, and our dispatch center is well provided for, that they have the training and the capacity we need, because that's fundamental. Our police department is going through training and reviews of the 21st Century National Task Force to make sure we're as good as we can be and to continue to improve. I'm really proud of that, and the events of this week have reminded us how, in a blink of an eye, that can become the most important issue in a community. And I want to be sure we're ready. This is a great community, and it's committed to safety, and we have a terrific public safety workforce, and I want to make sure we do everything we can to stay safe.
And is that 9 additional officers, or just part of the...
Filling in vacancies that have occurred. We have about 100 police officers, about the same number of firefighters in the city.
Just to leave today, I hear the Taste of Bloomington is coming up on Saturday, and I don't know where I heard this, but I think any new mayor has to try one of everything in the booth.
So are you up for that? Huh?
Yeah,
you just heard that today. Thanks a lot. I love the Taste of Bloomington. Does it say what size of taste you have to give me?
One of everything.
That'll be dangerous. Please do come. I hope it'll be a beautiful event, as it usually is. I trust it will, and it's always a great way to get a taste of Bloomington, right?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.